quasi-cerebral talk and tunes. This is Typically Tuesdays on CJSF 90.1 FM. Here's what we've got cooking up this hour. You are tuned in to Typically Tuesdays on CJSF 90.1 FM. We are the campus community radio station broadcasting from Burnaby Mountain at Simon Fraser University. This episode of Typically Tuesdays was produced and is broadcasting on unceded stolen lands of the Kwikwetlem, Musqueam, Squamish, and Tsleil-Waututh First Nations. At Typically Tuesdays, we recognize the host nations as being the original storytellers and knowledge keepers of these lands, and we thank them for their stewardship. My name is Leslie, and oh my god, the heat is getting to me. Is it getting to you? Perhaps not. Maybe you are a little bit more lucky than I am. If you've been a longtime listener of Typically Tuesdays, you know, because I talk about this like at every, essentially like any time that I can, just to complain. I'm very heat sensitive. And so this heat wave is like, it's getting to me. It's getting to me. And then, you know, in the past couple of years, becoming a little bit more sensitive and aware of, you know, green initiatives and the planet and the land and, you know, the environment in general. Not only am I suffering physically, but I am also suffering on a psychological level. Thinking about how, oh, it is so hot. Middle of June, ooh, baby, it is so hot. And guess what? It's gonna get even hotter next year, and the year after that, and the year after that, and the year after that. It's not a good time. And I'm not the only one who's suffering. You might be as well, of course, but for a very long time, my computer was also suffering. I, for a very long time, was using the old family computer to produce this program, which was good and all, fun and all. However, that old family computer in 2020 was 11 years old, probably 12 years old, very, very old. The baseline is just very old. You would hear it in the background, especially during the summer. And finally, at one point I was like, okay, I really got to hunker down and like get a new computer. Because I love making the show and I actually need a new computer. I have to like use a computer sometimes. But I never did it. I don't know if it was because I got lazy or because I just had too much going on in the brain. Again, climate change does that to you. But I never did it. Until it was too late. November of last year, my computer of 17 or 18 years crapped out on me, finally, in the middle of producing an episode of TT. And I was like, okay, well, I really gotta get a new computer now. Except I didn't. I just ended up using my mother's computer for 6 months until today. Until now. Not exactly today, but until now. My dear listener of Typically Tuesday, I'm so excited to share with you the grand, great news, exciting, human achievement, which is that I finally bought a new computer. Round of applause for me, specifically. It is a refurbished laptop. It costed a pretty penny because it is new, of course. But being refurbished, I was able to save some money and also like try not to contribute too much to the environmental damage and exploitation of mineral mining and stuff like that. So it works fine. It is a beaut. You know, I made last week's episode on it. Didn't have a chance to talk about that, but this is a belated celebration, you know? So please congratulate me. Please send me your well wishes. Text me over at 778-782-CJSF or 778-782-2573. I can read your text. And please, just praise me. I've been putting that in the back burner for so long. I need a little bit of validation. Just write, Leslie, I'm a listener of Typically Tuesdays. Congratulations on getting a new computer. Wow. Bravo. I'll be like, yeah, thank you. And I will shout you out next week. Let's get on with the meat. Let's get on to the meat. Let's get the meat of today's episode of Typically Tuesdays. Joining me later on, in just a very short, brief period of time, are the performers and organizers of Moikai 2. You might have heard of them before because they were on the show last year. Moikai is an idol music-centric performance festival that's happening later on this week over in Richmond, June 20th. You can get your tickets now over on anniesocial.square.site. But also, keep your ears peeled for today's show because I'm going to be talking to some really cool folks who've been in the scene for a while, in the scene, some of them for several years, and also people who have kind of just joined the local Vancouver overseas idol scene. I'm very excited to have that conversation with them, and I hope you're excited to listen to it as well. Learn a thing or two about idols. Come on. Gear up and get ready. Let's listen to a bird note first before we welcome our guests on to Typically Tuesdays.
This is Bird Note. It's hard to think of a more lowly regarded bird than the pigeon. But as Rosemary Mosco writes in her book, A Pocket Guide to Pigeon Watching, people and pigeons go back thousands of years and were beloved by royalty. Akbar the Great, ruler of the Mughal Empire in the 16th century, kept over 20,000 pigeons.
Akbar the Great would have visiting dignitaries watch his pigeons fly around, and his hope was to sort of subdue them into awe and, you know, have them want to do business with him.
And in parts of Europe, from the Middle Ages onward, pigeon owning was a privilege.
Like in France and in the UK, you were only really allowed to have pigeons if you were a royal.
England stopped enforcing this pigeon exclusivity in the mid-1600s. But over a century later in France, peasants who built illicit pigeon houses were still being forced to destroy them. Meanwhile, the elite's pigeons were allowed to fly into peasants' fields and snack on their crops. So pigeon ownership became a flashpoint in the French Revolution.
When the poor rose up, one of the things they did was they smashed all of the pigeon houses. And the people in charge desperately passed through these measures that said that, yes, okay, the poor can keep pigeons.
Pigeons are no longer exclusive to nobility. But next time you see these birds, consider giving them a little more respect. For Bird Note, I'm Mark Bramhill.
Welcome back to Typically Tuesdays on CJSF 90.1 FM. Hope you enjoyed those pigeon facts. There's a great episode of the podcast called 500 Open Tabs, specifically about pigeons, and they go over like the several types of pigeons and like the history of them. Oh, it's so good. Anyways, enough of the pigeon fangirling. We're here with the performers and organizers of Moikai 2, Electric Boogaloo, which is shortened to its true name, Moikai 2 only. We're going to be talking about this event, kind of promoting it and talking a little bit about the local scene, what it was like, how it's changed, and doing a little bit of a fangirling, fanboying, fan-limming, etc. Just to spice things up a little bit, you know? Folks were on the program last year performing the first iteration of Moikai, and the show was so successful, they decided to come back on very graciously. Thank you so much for joining me here, everybody. Why don't we do a quick round of introductions?
Hello, I'm Shirei. I'm the leader of Cloudtown Idols. We are a local idol group based in Vancouver, and we do J-pop covers. And soon, during this Moikai, we're going to release our demo of our first original song, so we're really excited about it.
Hi, my name is Mickey. I'm one of the leaders of Boyish 7. We are an anime idol cosplay cover group, and we just do covers of often anime idol boy series. and we've been around for a while.
Very exciting for you to talk a little bit about your tenure in the scene, but we'll save for a little bit later.
Oh, you will hear much about it.
Hi, I'm Pocket. I'm one of the event organizers at Anime Social. So we're the team that runs Moe Kai and also a couple other events like Ikemen Cafe and the Anime Social Conventions.
Very successful cafe and convention the past couple of months as well. I saw the men. Yes. congratulations on that. And then if you've been a longtime listener of Typically Tuesdays and you listened to last year's episode also promoting Moe Kai, then you would have familiarized yourself with Shirei, Mickey, and Pocket. But we have a new person on the program today as well. Yui, please go ahead.
Hi, my name is Yui. I'm from the group of three people. It's called Tuesday. And then we just had our performance on TJ Fest. We debuted. And then we are the local J-pop cover group. And in the future, we might do our original songs too. So, yeah.
Amazing. Hey. Thank you, everybody, for joining me today. Let's talk a little bit quickly about the event that we're going to be discussing. Imagine there's no social media, and I don't know, maybe there's no radio even. We're back in the olden days where you're like handing out flyers to people on the street, okay? And you see me, and then you give me a flyer. And I'm not just like any other kind of like passerby. I genuinely want to hear what this event is about. So talk a little bit about the event. Tell me about Moe Kai. Really pitch it to me.
Okay. I think if I was to pitch Moe Kai to you in a social media-less world and you're really interested, I would be like, hi, did you know that we actually have a really, really strong Japanese inspired idol community, and what that means is that we have a bunch of local performers who pour all of their passion and love for Japanese songs, Japanese idols, anime, Vocaloid, all that really good stuff, and they turn it into their own live performances on the stage. Well, we have a concert of just purely these passionate people singing, dancing, choreographing, cosplaying their hearts out to show their love for Japanese culture. And if you come to this concert, it's going to be a really, really fun time, not only because of the amazing performers that are going to be there, but also just the community in general is very, very special. We have in our community, there's something called Wodage, which is a dance that the audience do with light sticks to show their support to the idols. So it's a very, very unique community that I very much recommend checking out if you're interested in seeing some very, very cool performances of Japanese music.
That sounds really cool. Stranger on the Street. When is this happening and where?
Oh, well, Moe Kai is going to be happening on June 20th from 1 p.m. onwards. There's going to be five different groups performing. So there's going to be like 3 hours of dancing and singing. And then there's going to be a meet and greet afterwards where you get to meet the amazing performers, take some photos with them, stuff like that. And it's going to be in Richmond. The exact location can be found on our website, animesocial.ca. Otherwise, you can find it on our poster on Instagram. I know this was supposed to be a posterless world, but the address itself is number 200 at 12500 Vickers Way, Richmond, BC. Do you want the exact address?
Yes. Amazing. Thank you. That sounds like a really great summary of what this event entails and also a really good description of technically what it falls under, which is like the term that it falls under, which is a Taiban. Yeah, so thank you. We've got a good mix of folks on the program today who have varying, I think, like lengths of experience in the local idol scene. You know, I mean, Boyish Seven, we highlighted it really quickly when you were introducing yourself, Mickey, but your group has been around for 10 years. Cloudtown is pretty established, but is about half of that age. And then Tuesday, even though you just debuted you've been a performer for a while, also about 10 years, took a hiatus and then came back.
Yes.
Tell me about what the Vancouver Idol scene was like back when you first started learning about idols, and especially learning about idols in Vancouver. Or you can interpret that question as, like, tell me about what the idol scene looked like when you debuted, or just before you debuted. And what do you think has changed throughout the years?
I mean, like, 10 years ago, there's definitely no checkies, no goods, and stuff like that.
Hey, it's Editing Leslie. Really quickly here, we're going to be using the term checkie throughout this entire show. And what checkie refers to, if you're not already familiar, it's a Japanese term for Polaroid photo. At basically every idol event, after the performances, you get an opportunity to actually go meet the performer who you like and take a Polaroid photo with them. I hope that clears some things up. Let's go onward.
And then also not a lot of anime event convention or like place for us to perform as well. Right now, I feel like there's much more opportunity for the performers to do different things like what you guys were organizing, like Ikemen Cafe, and you guys also can perform there as well. And like sometimes they do the maid cafe as well. They also can perform there, so which is really good. A lot of opportunity for performance to like show themselves and perform on stage. And like, yeah, of course, like 10 years ago the Instagram is just started, and then also like not a lot of people like using social media and stuff. And that's why it's kind of hard to advertise your group and let other people to know about your group and something like that. I think like 10 years from now, this is like a really big change, what I think. Yeah.
I guess I just want to add on to that. I can confirm everything that Yui's saying. We did not have Instagram back then. We only had Facebook. And I just remember the days when we was like, hey guys, we gotta get the Facebook event out, share it to all your friends, all five of them, make sure as many of them can reach it. Didn't have any checkies, and mostly at the time there weren't a lot of weren't a lot of opportunities to perform back then. Mostly we had like one of the only places that we could actually perform would be like an anime convention, which is like the only quote unquote socially acceptable place to perform, especially because us at Boyish 7, we're an anime idol cosplay group. So we usually perform in cosplay. But even with that said, like we still, as Boyish 7, we still wanted to we still wanted to get more experiences. We're like, hey, you know what? We do like what we do. We still want to share it with as many people as possible. So there would be times when we had to make opportunities for ourselves. For example, this is a really funny one. I think we were in our third year. We had a friend who said, hey, you guys want to perform at a retirement home?
Oh, wow.
And we're like, why not? Let's perform at a retirement home. So they had this an event at a community center at Guildford with a whole bunch of people, the residents of the retirement home coming in, just having a good time. And we performed for a bunch of seniors. And it was great. And it happened a couple times. We performed for a retirement home. We performed for local community events. At the time, I remember it was this one children-based Suri event we went to, lots of kids, and we were in the library. But yeah, no, it was, yeah, things like that. So nowadays it's really cool to see like anime social, having these great events, like other events too, like Anime Rise also making events like these, or all these different opportunities for idols to come in and perform. We're really thankful for that. Yeah.
Yeah, I think I didn't know what was going on before for us, because I was like, basically Cloud Town, we joined the local scene because we want to attend the anime convention for the first time. So like performing at Anime Revolution at the moment was the first time we ever experienced the community. And I think we also experienced a like a development as time goes by. First of all, people do no longer use Facebook. I remember submitting a Facebook link to apply for to perform at conventions. And then I think more and more groups are coming as like J-pop idol cover groups in comparison to like Vocaloid or like anime cosplay groups, I think. And also, I think as time goes by, the groups are all developing their like merch systems and checky systems, which is like making this whole economy, like I want to call it, like hopefully we build an economy around it. So like make this economy more developed and more round all rounded, so like we can have more people to join this community.
Yeah, we kind of have a society going on, I feel. The Idol Society. Vancouver Idol Society, but anyway.
It's really interesting that you guys mentioned, like, I guess, like, just how integrated into, like, the anime scene and hobbyist scene at Idols used to be. I remember, I mean, even like kind of like 20 years ago, like watching performances of like cosplay groups or anime clubs of like at like other conventions on YouTube, performing sort of dance covers and vocal covers of like popular J-pop or like anime. I was surprised to find now, later on, that a lot of the folks who used to do that, am I making myself clear? Yeah, I think the folks who used to do that, 20, 15 years ago, who were going to, I don't know, Anime Revolution and cosplay doing a dance, would now, the idol stuff that's happening now is very similar to what I was doing back then, but it was less interactive with the audience. It was less. I don't know if I can say commercialized, but it was less, there was less of like a specific performer identity behind it. It was more
There
so
wasn't a
about,
label. There wasn't a label for it back then. I would agree. Sorry, don't mean to interject. But
No, I.
I 100% understood exactly where you're coming from. Like back then, we didn't have any labels like idols. We're like, I'm a performer. I dance. I go up on stage. Put on a little fun costume. Have a good time. But it was only until maybe within the last 5 years, I would say, like COVID, like during COVID area, where it was like, oh, this is the idol scene now, you know?
Yeah, it's very interesting. And also, I mean, to also kind of like highlight a lot of the performers back then, their identity would have been like a cosplayer. But now, I mean, not to reveal too many of the secrets that Yui has, I guess, but like after a while you would come out and maybe like do like J-pop dance covers instead, rather than specifically doing like cosplay. Anyways, sorry, I was just like really fascinated by that because
It's fascinating. No, I agree.
Thank you. I feel so
No, it's
validated.
absolutely no, like, because again, I've been here for too long. But like just seeing the evolution of the idol community from back then to now, it's like if you had told me 10 years ago, shake me by the shoulders and say, hey, you're going to identify as an idol in 2026, I'd be like, you're insane. I just put on I do cosplay covers That's it. But then, you know, so it's different. But it's neat how it's changed in this way.
Yeah, there's like there's like a totally different like performer identity to it now, right? I was talking last year with some idols from Taiwan. Also check the archive if you haven't listened to it, my interviews with Meikai Oceanus and Setsuna. But these performers from Taiwan, they are established groups and performers out there. And in Taipei, the scene is very... there was like a kind of like a hobbyist cosplay and anime loving edge to it when it first started. But now what they've told me basically that it is evolved into being more of like a, it is considered to be a little bit more like legitimate and commercialized over there. It sits kind of like in the intersection of being heavily inspired by, you know, underground J-pop idol groups, and then also being thought of as like underground Taiwanese music. And so when they performed in North America, they were at Idol Fest last fall, and they saw what the North American scene looked like. They found it really interesting because some of the things that stood out was that in North America, there's a lot more diversity of people and performers, but then and performance styles, but then also the folks who perform in the North American scene, they are still sort of more like hobbyist. And as much as they would want to like take their performances seriously, the outside world would also consider them a little bit more hobbyist and being more related to like the anime scenes and cosplay scenes. From all of your different perspectives and your sort of familiarity, you know, in Vancouver and also from other places, I'm sure you're also observing and maybe even have lived seeing the idol scenes in other places. Can you tell me a bit about how you envision the local scene as it currently stands compared to other alternative idol communities around the world, and where you hope Vancouver will go in the coming years? Let's like think of like, you know, a 5-year vision or like a 10-year vision.
From my own perspective, because I was watching local like underground idol performances in Shanghai and China, and I saw a lot of like online too, like, you know, like Aisu from iLife. You know, I feel like in a way that I want to turn our hobby into something that we can live with. So like we can, our life is depend on it, kind of like we use our hobby and transformed it into professions that hopefully will like make it grow bigger and bigger. And then in eventually we're going to be like professional idols. That's the at least the 5-year goal. But also, I feel like for the cosplay groups, I still think it's a really valid thing in North America. Like, I feel like, because I went to the Oda Fest in Calgary, they also, like, I feel like we can just not only just, like, take the idol scene in Japan or in Asia, we can also start making our own culture, but, like, to define what is an idol. You know, like, I don't feel like we have to obey or, like, follow the recipe from Asia. We can create our own recipe and make it great.
Yeah, I totally agree. I think that I don't think our community is suited for, like, necessarily, like, the traditional format anyway. I think there's a reason why we have so many different types of performers and why... there's just so much diversity here, like you said, like the Taiwan idols mentioned. From like a events organizing perspective as well, we also really, really want to allow idols to, you know, we want these hobbyists to make their hobbies sustainable. You know, that's like the